All right, I suspect this is going to be my farewell to Seoul episode. It's Friday right now, and my train out of here is Monday. Originally, I was going to maybe take a bullet train all the way to Busan, but instead I'm only taking a normal train 90 minutes to some city not that far from here, so it's really not that big of a journey anyway. But let's do up, down, up. Good thing, bad thing, and then mainly good things. And by the way, this will tie into what I'm going to talk about this episode, but I am at the Jeonnyeong Gate of Bukhansan National Park, Jeonnyeong, next to the big rock mounds I mentioned last episode, but I'm going the opposite way this time. And I found the rock mounds. That's important, because again, yeah, that'll tie into what I'm going to talk about after. But yeah, good thing, I'm glad that I stayed in Seoul for this little extra bit. Because when I first got here, I had two Airbnb bookings back to back. And for the first time ever, I looked into the idea of canceling the second one, because I wanted to get out of here so bad, because it just seemed so dour. The city itself was just so much grimier, and I found it so much less pleasant than Japan, and I had found no way to escape. I didn't know about the mountains yet, so I was just walking through this city, and the pollution problem became more and more evident. And yeah, I was just walking through this, like, literally gray, like the sky was gray from pollution. Garbage strewn about, just walking around this city, and I was just like, God damn it, I hate this. I don't want to get out of here. So I'm glad my Airbnb was not really cancelable, because things turned around a lot. Things went a lot better. So I'm glad I didn't bail out halfway through. Even in hindsight now, the first day I was here, already in my mind, has much better connotations when I think about it. Because it's one of those things like, it can only be the first time, one time, you know? So the first night I arrived, and my Airbnb is by Hapjeong Station near Hongik University. Super hip, super happening neighborhood. Have I mentioned, by the way, that on the weekends, there's a lot of dance clubs around there? If you walk past one of those areas, they do that super, super crazy loud thumping music that just like rumbles your whole head, but not inside. I'm sure inside also. They do that fucking outside on the street. As you walk by, you get the oh, boom, 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 boom. It's interesting to walk past once or twice and then get the fuck out of there. But yeah, the first night getting to my Airbnb and realizing I didn't have a power adapter for my computer. And then going out onto that main strip and seeing all the big buildings and stuff and trying to find somewhere that would sell an adapter. But all the stores were way too high-end around there, and I finally realized I could go to a 7-Eleven. And the 7-Elevens generally, all the convenience stores, they're so much smaller here than they are in Japan. They're just little tiny, like, bodega-style holes in the wall, like New York-style. But I found one tucked away in some corner somewhere. Found a little adapter for like $5. Paid with my T-Money card. Like, it was a weird thing, because I just sort of didn't feel overwhelmed at all. Even at that time, I felt a little proud of just how kind of easily I could navigate. Like, okay, I know basically I can sort out this problem. And I've been to enough big cities now in my life that, I mean, like way back in 2003, the first time I went to Montreal outside of like a family trip when I was just there with one of my friends, I remember it feeling kind of overwhelming. It just felt so busy. There were so many people. It felt so crowded. Where nowadays, Montreal feels like a ghost town compared to the other fucking places I've been. But yeah, it was a weird day at best. And even already now, thinking back to it, it feels better. It's like, yeah, it actually was kind of cool. Kind of an exciting big cool city with all the lights and stuff, and sorting out the little, you know, how much I love to just sort out a small problem, you know, how easily I sorted out the small problem. I think it feels better too in my memory because Japan has receded a lot. It's a lot easier to take South Korea on its own merits. Now that it's been a month and a half, Japan has receded back into being a dream I can go back to someday, but that doesn't feel real. It already has just returned to legend in my subconscious, where at that point, I had been there that morning, you know, and that sudden shift, the shift from Japan to South Korea, that didn't feel good, but I don't remember how that felt anymore. That's all gone. But yeah, in those first couple of weeks, I remember kind of the best I could manage to get out of the city was kind of the first mini mountain that I found that wasn't too far from there, and it just had some exercise equipment on it and was no big deal, but it was all right. Walking up the kind of back side of it, I found a little bench halfway up, receded into some woods a little so I could just kind of sit there and look out over the hazy city. The weird haze of the city. Just sit there with my phone and do some writing or something. And I was like, well, I guess this'll do. I guess this'll do while I wait out this weird purgatory. But then, yeah, things got a lot better with each step. Anson Mountain was the first one that I found. But really, Ingwansen was the big one with the wall. That's still an awesome walk. I did it just a couple of days ago. Not only is there the main wall walk, but there's a part where it splits off and goes along the ridge of a second mountain. And that part is really cool. There are some parts where you're basically just walking along a bare rock that has a rope fence on both sides, which thank God, it would be scary as fuck without that. Even with it, it's a little freaky. But it's pretty amazing because you're way up in the air and you can see the city on both sides. And you just make your way down the ridge and yeah, very, very excellent. So that turned things around a lot. I was like, man, Ingwansen, that's really good. But there was still the creepiness of the pollution haze in the distance. But then I think what really made me like it around here is this place, is Bukhansan National Park. This took some time, because at first I was just finding stuff over on the west part of it. Just kind of flat pathways that were pretty cool, but I gradually found my way to the real peaks, like I'm walking right now. Or, I don't quite go to the peaks, but you know, I kind of go up toward a peak and then skirt it around. In between peaks is my preferred method. So yeah, it was a combination of this national park is insanely beautiful and enormous and really well signposted and really well maintained. It's everything you could want. And at the same time, the pollution didn't really get better, just my interpretation of it relaxed a little. Where today is a moderate day. You know, the green days where it's just, you know, non-polluted, you really can't count on that. It happens sometimes, but if you just wait for those days, it's a long wait for a train that's never going to come. The red days are still, I think, a good day to stay inside. Go to a coffee shop instead. Do not go hiking. Because it's visible. You can tell on those days. Like, it really looks like the apocalypse. It's fucking horrible. That's what it was like the first day I went up Ingwansen, when I didn't realize that things were this way. And yeah, it made my chest burn and my throat hurt. And it looked like a nightmare. So those days stay home. But today, a moderate day, it's like, hey, whatever. I don't live here. I'm just visiting. I don't have my mask on right now, but I'll put it on when I'm done podcasting. I should have it on, but, you know, I'll survive. Whatever. Moderate's good enough. So I found these really beautiful walking paths. This really amazing national park, I say found. I mean, it's right there. It's right by the train. But it just still took a lot of tries. It did take me several weeks to really suss out what's going on around here, to parse out how everything works. Because I guess, yeah, that's another memory I had at first, is failed attempts to get up mountains. because there's mountains fucking everywhere. They're all over the place. But I'd pick one and try to approach it. And if you can't find the official entrance, the official path, you're not getting up there. You very much need to be on the prescribed paths around here. And once you're on them, it's great. You're not going to get lost. But yeah, I remember one day in particular, just trying to go to some mountain and failing, but walking through a whole different part of town I'd never been to, and it just got worse and worse. It got more dirty and more fucked up and more awful. I'm like, this fucking city sucks. Fucking hate this. So things have definitely turned around from I fucking hate this. Now I like this, almost to the point that it's like, oh, I'm leaving in a few days. That sort of sucks. I could spend a lot more time exploring Bukhansan. But yeah, that's the upside. Glad I stayed longer because things are going much, much better. I'm feeling a lot better about this place. You know, the combination of Japan has become fuzzier to me, so I'm not really comparing the two anymore. My idea of what's an acceptable level of pollution creepily has just changed. It's like, a moderate day, that's fine. I'll still go hiking. And the bigger the mountains get, the better they get around here. And they're all so close and they're so easy to get to. Once you know how to get there, it's wonderful. So there's the up. Now the down, why I'm actually, ultimately I am glad that I'm getting the fuck out of here and leaving, is just because of the Airbnb. My two stays are at the same place, but the change in room completely fucked me. I'm at this little tiny share house, soft house, with like 30 some people all crammed in there, 30 little rooms. And the first room I was in had a window I could open. Not both panes, like you couldn't open it straight to the outside, which is actually better, you know, keep that pollution air out. But if you opened one of the panes, you could regulate the temperature in the room. Small thing, but makes all the difference, because then I moved to a different room that doesn't have a window, and I'm at the mercy of whatever the heat is in this building. And the heat is always between too hot and literal oven. And it's just so awful, you know. I tried to come do this hike yesterday, and I couldn't, because I just couldn't fall asleep. I was up till like 6 or 7 a.m. And then I tried to come here, but by the time I got my shit together and got out here, I was on the train and everything, and I realized it was nearing on to 3 p.m. I was like, I just can't do this today. Whereas today, wasn't exactly an early riser, but yeah, I mean, now it's 1:40 right now, but I'm already on the route, on the way up. Big difference. If I was still not even close to here yet, I just didn't want to risk it. Want to make sure I got plenty of time so I don't have to be stressed about the sun going down. And yeah, the heat, I don't know, dude. I just can't sleep through it. But I don't know if I was like going to gauge the various difficult to sleep situations that I've been on in this trip. I was thinking about them, and it's like, all right, the Sanganjaya place that had bed bugs. Is that better or worse? Like, would I trade it in? It's like, no, I would not. The being right next to the train track in Akiruno, would I trade this for that? No, I would not. The insane amount of snoring, you know, just the chainsaw snoring of a person right beneath me in a bunk bed when I was by the Sky Tree, would I trade this for that? No, no, I would not. So it's hard to say this is the worst of them, because all those situations were awful. Just not being able to sleep is just shit. There's no good version of it. However, none of those other situations made me physically angry. This one, last night, just trying to fall asleep. So close. Feeling your own mind start to just like produce abstract imagery. You're like, oh geez, I'm almost asleep. And then waking up because you're just sweating. And that happens over and over and over for like 4 hours. I was so angry. It's like torture. It's like actual torture. So it's hard to say that this is the worst sleeping situation because, like I said, I wouldn't trade it for any of the other ones. I wouldn't want any of them. But this is the one that makes me lose my shit, that is making me become untethered from civil politeness. Like, I'm so fucking angry. So, I mean, maybe this is the worst. It's so awful that, and again, it's amazing how much difference it makes. I will happily come back to this place when I'm back in Seoul. I like it a lot. The little place overall is great, but you need to be able to regulate the temperature. It's just like, fuck, this room without a window. I will definitely not return to that room. But yeah, it's so bad, and my sleep schedule has become so fucked that I literally wasn't sure if I'd be able to manage coming back here with only these last few days. Because even today, it was like, whew, I managed to pull it off somehow. I managed to fall asleep somewhere around 4:30 in the morning and woke up early enough to get my ass out here at a reasonable time to go hike over this mountain. But it might not happen tomorrow, might not happen on Sunday. This might be it. You know, this is officially closing the case on this little mountain. As much as I love it, this is my fare thee well. Because I'm a bad sleeper anyway. And this is ridiculous. It's like having little demons with fire pokers poking me all night. And it's like, what? Just sleep. Just sleep through it. It's fucking so insane. So shit. This is interesting. So I'm going to the Daesongmun Gate. And I knew I wanted a temple on the way. There's a sign here that leads toward two different temples, but one of them is only 0.2 kilometers away. So let's go see. Quite sure this is not the one I'm meaning to go to, but that's very close. So let's at least just go see what it is. Yeah, this is why I don't want to start too late in the day, because if everything goes just right, even starting very late in the day, I'm probably fine. But I like having the option of experimenting. And that's what I want to talk about with the final up. Is I want to ramble some of the little adventures that I had on this mountain and how incredibly minute changes in which route you take can really take you to some remarkably different places. But perhaps I'll save that till I'm on my way down on the other side. Because I'm on my way up right now and it's only getting steeper and steeper. So yeah, let's take a little mountain hike break while I hike up and over this bad boy. Oh man, I can actually see the speaker. So I went to the side shrine that was 0.2 kilometers away. It was a really kind of a cute little shrine. I've only found a couple of shrines where you can actually go in and then there's all the little Buddha statues and stuff. That was one of them though. Very cool. And now I'm passing the bigger shrine that I passed down by before coming the other way. And yeah, it's playing cool, eerie chanting music, but I actually see the speaker. In Japan, I could never see those speakers. They're always scaring the crap out of me. Although I can probably only see this one because it's March. And there's no leaves on this tree, otherwise it would be hidden away. Hello. But yeah, I'm only halfway up the mountain, maybe a little more than half, but I figured actually I should record on the way up because it's the classic conundrum. Going up is harder physio-wise, but going down is harder footing-wise. And so far, it seems like the snow is actually maybe melted up here, but we'll see. Last time I was up here, there was still a bunch of snow at the top. And I still got a ways to go. So yeah, going down the slippery, snowy steps on the other side, probably better that I focus and pay attention and have my hands free in case I gotta do a little crab walking. So I'm gonna record on the way up, but I also, man, I go up so slow. I am like a legitimate 90-year-old man speed. I'm almost like proud of myself because I find that so hard to do normally. Like down on the ground, if I just walked slower day to day, it would probably be better for my various joints and aches and pains. But there's that little neurotic bit of me that's like hard to slow down. But I've gotten very good at going slow up mountains because you just kind of get into the groove of it. And yeah, just knowing that if I go really slow, my knees won't hurt tomorrow. My hips won't hurt tomorrow. Nothing will hurt tomorrow. If anything, I'll feel better tomorrow. I will become stronger by going really, really slow. Pain is a powerful motivator and the avoidance thereof. Yeah, if I go up slow, I won't injure myself. And I gotta breathe really deeply the whole time, but I also won't get that horrible, uncomfortable, blown up feeling. I don't know. What do people call that? Just being winded, I guess? In wrestling, they call it being blown up when you're just huffing for air. It's a bad feeling, and I realize, like, I always felt that way, hiking and going up mountains and stuff. It always was this, like, painfully unpleasant, like, oh, geez, I can barely breathe. Because I was always going too fast, even if I was a young whippersnapper. But it's like, the only fucking equation I really ever remembered from high school physics is just... Well, I say I remember it, I don't actually remember. The gist of it is the energy over time, you know? You want to get somewhere faster, it takes more energy. You want to get there slower, it takes less energy and more time. And it's a good trade. You take the time, you get to spend more time on the mountain, you get to really soak it in, and you don't expend energy to the point of injuring yourself and feeling miserable. It's just great. So yeah, this place, Bukhansan National Park, also, despite being so huge and having all these official entrances and stuff, still surprisingly difficult as a nut to crack. Where, like I was saying, I first found various stuff over to the west, just weird little pathways that were relatively flat. And those were cool. And I kept seeing the one mountain peak with the weird antenna on top and thinking, like, can you actually go there? Is that a thing? And then I found that you can literally just go right up the ridge of that mountain. Where it was kind of cool, but it was also quite steep and kind of freaky. And I didn't go all the way to the top. I just found a path to go down. So it was like, I was having a hard time finding the happy middle. Because I either found the really flat part or the way too intense steep part. And then I found another path toward a big mountain. And similar thing, I went most of the way up, 3/4 of the way, and it just was so steep. And I was using all my hands and feet and climbing literally, and I didn't have my proper boots yet. And it was just freaking me out. I just went back down. So I was like, man, Bukhansan's cool, but it's so intense. Like, these are actual mountains. And then the day that it all became clear was instead of the west side, was when I took the train line over to the east side. And I call it the King's Quest day because I don't know what else to call it. The day where I was talking about walking up steps. I mean, the episode was called Maybe You Should Visit Seoul in the Winter. It was such a good day that I was turning around like, yeah, even though the pollution is a problem, it's so beautiful on this mountain path. The snowy steps up through the rocks, that it's hard not to recommend that. It was so nice. I went and checked, by the way. I don't know, it was definitely King's Quest 5 I was thinking of, because I don't think 6 has any snow parts. But in 5, In my memory, the snow area gradually became snowy, but it actually doesn't. It's like one screen. You just go up in the mountains and all of a sudden, boom, you're in the snow. And then you go through that for a bit and then it's like one screen back to no snow. Really what it's closer to is Quest for Glory 1. That whole game takes place in the spring with the snow melting around the trees. That's what it was more like. But even that day, my approach to the mountain was literally just go to a station near the edge of the mountain, look for a little point on Google Maps where it seems like the road goes up and disappears into the mountain, and cross one's fingers. And yeah, it was a little bit weird, you know, I had to go up through some neighborhood, behind some houses, to a little park, and then through a very ramshackle series of trails that were just kind of behind people's houses. But there were other people there and stuff. And I had to walk through that for some time before it became National Park, dun dun dun, super beautiful, heading upward into the snowy, beautiful rock paths and rock fucking steps. It really wasn't until the end of that day where I exited at the spot that I entered today. That was where I'd say I finally found one of the proper entrances to the park. Like until then I'd just kind of been cobbling my way through or just sneaking my way in wherever I could. When in this case, because everything is so well laid out and so well curated and manicured here in Seoul, it's better to take the big official entrances. Way better. Leads to way more options. Way less ramshackle an adventure. And I'm on this cool rock outcropping. Ooh, actually I shouldn't walk any closer. A little freaky. Really good view. Really good view. And yeah, again, it's like this is more than polluted enough today to have freaked me out before. I got a little app for my phone. I think it said today it was like somewhere between 80 and 90, where under 50 is where you want to be to not be in danger. But you just, I don't know, you just get used to it. I will definitely put my mask back on again after I'm done recording this podcast, but yeah, it's all relative, I guess. I do feel like living here is very, that'd be a very difficult choice. But for just visiting, not that bad. And I am curious to see how much difference it makes. Again, like I said, my next place is only an hour and a half from here. Is that far enough? On my little app, I have been checking, like, good old Busan, the other famous city. It's way down by the coast, and it does seem significantly better, air quality-wise. But I'm not heading straight there. I'm gonna meander my way down. But yeah, this one building, maybe I should go see that. I don't know how it would look from the ground, but since I've only got the weekend left, and this is almost certainly my last day hiking mountains here, I believe this big, it looks so crazy because it's like this giant building. It's way bigger than all the other buildings. And because it's always in the misty haze of pollution, it looks like it's out of a fucking sci-fi book from the 60s or something. And I believe it's Lotte Tower, L-O-T-T-E. I'll tell you about him soon, but I met a guy who told me, like, oh, you must be referring to Lotte Tower because it's the biggest building structure in Seoul. It's interesting, too, just to realize which companies are from which country. Like Lotte. The little, like, ice cream pouch that I bought in Japan was a Lotte ice cream. Turns out Lotte is Korean. Big-time Korean company. Where, on the other hand, there's Daiso stores. I never really used them in Japan, but I use them quite a bit here. For whatever reason, just the way things worked out, I didn't need a dollar store in Japan. Here, I seem to always need one for some little thing or another. And they take T-money cards, but Daiso is Japanese, and they're everywhere around here. So yeah, Lotte has made it to Japan, Daiso's made it to here. I'm sure there's all kinds of crossover. But it's interesting to figure out, who's from where. But yeah, from this Junyoung entrance, I came back here, hung a left, hung a west, and ended up at Gugi, which Gugi is still my favorite entrance. It's also, I mean, they're all very pretty, because it's always like following these streams tends to be where, I guess, the major entrances are. Gugi was really cool. And then I figured out how to get to Gugi on foot pretty easily through the tunnel. See previous episodes for details. So what I wanted to do, because I went from Gugi to this Junyoung entrance and didn't realize right away that it was the same one. Like, oh wait, that's that one that I've been to several times. I kind of did it by accident. But then I thought, all right, that's quite a straightforward route that I took, that particular branch between, because the entrances are basically next to each other. So you're just heading west to east or east to west to get from one to the other. And it's not that bad, you know, it's over a mountain, but not over a peak of a mountain. It's just up to this gate, up one side, down the other. It takes a while, it'll take the afternoon, but it's pretty straightforward and a very nice walk from one major entrance to the other. So I thought, let's do that in reverse, which is what I'm doing today. But today is attempt number two. Because attempt number one, I was really surprised how much, like I was saying earlier, small little navigational differences have huge differences to the outcome. I'm starting to see snow now. Snow is starting to appear on the sides of the mountain and a bit on the steps. So yeah, the landmarks all seemed pretty easy to follow, because from Gugi, there's not actually very many options. It's quite straightforward up to the Daedongmun Gate, but I did find a little, just before the gate, a little side path over to a temple, but then that still led up to the gate. And then there's quite a few options on the other side of the gate. You can go down this way that I came up this time, where the big rock mounds are the giveaway that you're on this path. If you head over to the west, that takes you over to King's Quest land, and also you can take an alternate route over to the temple with wild dogs, where the wild dogs chased me away and scared me. You can go along the gate, there's different stuff. But anyway, so I came in at Junyoung, and I knew that I had already gone from there west through the Nature Interpretive Trail. I did that once, and actually that took me up to that temple with the scary dogs. That was quite a long route, that one, winding around the sides of the mountains. Very cool, but very long. So I knew I wanted to trend a little easterly, and I was looking for those rock piles, but I guess I went too far east. I took one turn too many. Because I was going along and I didn't see the rock piles. And it's like, okay, well, those are very distinctive. I'm definitely on a different route. But I'm still just heading up into the mountains. How bad could it be? How different could it be? And it wasn't crazy different. It was just a different route up the mountains. So that was pretty cool, but it got me to a different gate. Up in the snow, there's like a wall up there, like a little mini great wall. And the gates are the archways that go through the wall. So I got up there, it was super snowy. I was at a different gate. But from there I could go west along the gate to the Daedongmun Gate that I was trying to get to. And it was pretty tricky. It was a longer trek than I expected. And it was really steep and really snowy, but there was not only ropes, but like it was like a rope fence, so like pillars in the ground with ropes that you could basically use to kind of climb, which was good because it was very slippery and slidey. So much so that when I got way up to one of the peak parts, I met some other hikers, some older. Everybody's older. Very few young hikers here. Some, but not many. Everybody's my age or older, mostly, it seems. I don't know what the young folk are up to in this town. going to fucking Hapjeong, going to the clubs, bum 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 bum. But the old people are all about mountain hiking and doing exercise on the mountains with all the exercise equipment that's everywhere. But they couldn't speak English, but one lady pointed to some, she had like literal chains on her boots. And was like, hey, you should have these. And I was like, oh yeah, maybe. Even though I got these new boots with these big treads, it's still pretty slippery up here. And yeah, her husband was like, he could speak a little English. So he's like, hey, careful, slidey. But all I could do was assure them that I would be careful. But it was tricky. It was pretty tough. But I went along that and I got to the gate. And I'm like, sweet, all right, here's the gate. Just head straight down here. That's the gate with the lightning warning sign. Be careful, you could be struck by lightning. But these gates are very cool and very beautiful. But I was like, no problem. There's really only, you know, like I was saying, the Googie route is very limited. It's very straightforward. There's not all these different options you can take. So I was like, all right, just head down from here. And I did it. But I knew there was like a slight little side divergence to a temple. And I think today I will try again to take that little side route. But just knowing that that was there kind of messed me up. Because I was like, all right, I know I need to trend to the right a little bit to go take that little extra loop over to the temple. But I just went to the right too soon. Because again, there's like these options that you would never notice on your way coming in one direction because you would have had to double back. You know, it's like right behind you. You just walk past it and you don't realize. Going on these routes backwards is like a whole different thing. There's so many weird options and divergences that you just don't see until you're in the reverse, coming in the reverse method, which is definitely the best way to describe that, coming in the reverse method. Whew, man, these mountain peaks are pretty. Fuck my dick. So nice. But yeah, I started going down this path, and I'd also seen a little temple down there somewhere, and I was like, well, that doesn't seem like the same temple. The temple I was thinking of was, like, on the edge of the mountain. This was a temple down in a valley, but I'd seen it when I was going along the side of the gate. I was like, what is that tucked away down there? And I seemed to be heading toward it, and it was really steep, really steep on the way down. Had to slide on my butt a little bit, because it was so steep and snowy. But it was nowhere near any cliffs or anything. It was, again, just going down into a valley. Very not scary, just steep. But there were quite a few other hikers and stuff. And there was a power line going down it. Like way down, all the way down, really. So many signs of civilization that I was like, all right, quite quickly sure this was not the right way. But there's some building down there. There's other people hiking. There's a power line. It quickly turned into, again, a stream. Just following a stream down. So I was like, all right, this was the wrong way, but let's see what this is. Let's explore.
Howdy.
Because yeah, since all the trails are so prescribed, it's kind of cool that even on a part of the route where I didn't really think there were options. I thought there was kind of just the one way down to Googie. But I found another way. And I'm like, all right, cool. Let's see what this is. And the first sign that I saw said that it was heading to another entrance. And it was about 4 kilometers. Which all the other routes are only about 2. These are all like quite short paths. They're just really, really steep, you know? Like, I'm looking out of the city right now, it's just not that far away, it's right there. Once I get over to the other side of this, there will be more city, not that far away, about 2 kilometers. It's just that you go up, way up, is what makes it feel much longer than it is. But 4 kilometers is obviously double. But I was like, yeah, that's all right, you know, it's getting a little late in the day. But at this point, it stays light till like 6:30. And at that point, I don't know, it's probably like 4 o'clock. I was like, yeah, no problem. This will be fine. I'm clearly on the way down on a well-marked trail, again with the power lines. If anything, it was more major than the average trail. Other people are on it. And it's just a nice gradual but long walk. So I'm like, all right, cool, let's see what this is. And basically, it was taking me north, which all these other paths basically are just, I'm going east or west and just popping back out down at the south end of the mountains. North, it just goes on and on and on forever. Way high up north, not forever, but for a ways. And this was definitely one of those cases where not only, I'm not quite sure where the 4 kilometer delineation is. I think it was actually farther than that. Because once it got to the official entrance, it still went on for some time on more of an official paved road, winding its way down. But the whole walk down to the main entrance was extremely beautiful and pretty and nice and gradual and easy. Oh, and I walked past a wild dog. There was one point where a wild dog was trotting toward me, and I really had no way to get out of the way. There's nowhere I could go. We were at a point where it was just a stream on one side and the cliff on another. So I just stood off to the side and let it trot by. It was a female dog. And it just trotted by, and then as it went past me, then it stopped and looked back at me. Just watched me as I left. It was kind of interesting, just on the mountain highway, just letting a dog pass. Whew. 0.8 kilometers. De Songmun Gate. Is that what I've been... I feel like the gate that I'm going to and the gate that's on my map, they both start with D. But I don't think that's the same name. De Namun. De Songmun, you know? Oh, I see. Okay. They're essentially the same gate. De Dongmun, De Jongde. All the gates along that all have just variations of that name, so they're very close to each other. They're essentially either or. Where I believe it was the Bogonmun gate that I went to when I got turned around a little. Bogungmun. And the Songdaikbong Peak must be where I met those people who were concerned about my footwear and my lack of chains. I don't think I needed chains on my feet. I think that's a little severe. But again, I don't know. I think a lot of it really is just my willingness to scramble, my willingness to be on all fours. But I guess if you do just want to stay upright and on your 2 feet the whole time, then yeah, I guess you need chains and you need poles and you need all this stuff. But you can get a lot done if you go to crap mode. So yeah, I slowly made my way along the northern route, the 4 kilometer route, gradually down, nice and pretty. A lot of snow in there, because I guess it's just in this valley. Didn't get as much sun. Quite a bit of snow here now, incidentally. A lot of the snow has melted, but there's still a fair amount up here. And here's another sign. Yeah, so many signs. So well signposted. De Songmun Gate. Jongyun is where I came from. Yeah, only 2.3 kilometers where I came from. Sure does feel longer. And then over that way to the Bugak Park Ranger Post. Is that... I don't think that's the dog temple. I think it's higher up. But anyway, it's over there somewhere. And there's just stone steps here again, straight out of a medieval adventure game. So fucking cool looking. But anyway, yeah, so the other day, as I was going north, gradually making my way down through the valley, toward the end, I met a guy, a South Korean guy, but who could speak English, and was fairly enthusiastic. And actually, I wish I had asked him. I only thought about this after, but he had something on his back that was like a little metal step stool or something. So I'm sure it's some kind of climbing equipment, but I don't know what the heck it was. But we got to chatting as we were walking, and his English was pretty good. I found out he lived for 6 months in Australia, and that does seem pretty much like at the level he was at, where we could talk pretty easily. But it was definitely that level of English where maybe he just was looking for people to talk to, because it did feel like it would easily slip from his grasp if he stopped using it. You know, he was at that point of like, it would be easy to just let this fade away. But again, more than good enough for us to just chat about stuff. So, you know, we just talked about where I was from and how I was staying at a little soft house. And if anything, I thought it was pretty good that my soft house is like so cheap. It was like $16 a day or whatever it is. He guessed $10 a day. He's like, hey, those things are super cheap. So it's like, man, maybe there's some even more cheap ones out there. Like, man. But basically, he offered me a drive to the subway, which turned out to be a great boon. I was very glad I ran into this guy, because that's when I realized that the entrance, quote unquote, was still very far from anything. It seemed like we just kept driving and driving and driving down this winding road past all these other people, not having like a fun hike part of the hike. They were just stuck walking along the side of this winding road. Here we go. Ilsiona Temple with restrooms. That's the one for sure. Ilsionsa. Ilsionsa Temple. That's the wild dog temple. I don't know if it's always a wild dog temple, but the day I went, it sure was. So I will not go that way. Just continue on. But yeah, he said it'd probably be like another half an hour to walk down that road. And then it just spit us out in the middle of nowhere. Like, even in a car, it was quite a drive to a metro station. So I was very glad to bump into this guy and happy to accept his offer of a drive. Because it was, you know, at that point, like 5:30 or something. Not too bad, but if I had to do that all on foot, it would have got dark before I made it to a subway, and it just would have been a really long walk. Like, I was up in the northern part of the mountain. All I could do was walk all the way around until I got to a subway through not very pleasant, you know, mega city stuff. That would have been a bit of a shit day. So that guy really saved me. But it's funny, too, like, parsing it through now. Oh, yeah, and I asked him about the tower. He's the one who said it must be the Lot Tower. Little things I didn't quite clue into at the time. He kept trying to give me, he had like a red bean paste pastry, and he was quite insistent that I eat it. And I was like, no, that's okay. I mean, I was a little hungry, but I would rather just wait till I got somewhere proper and gorge on my one big super meal for the day. If I eat a little bit, it'll just, the way my metabolism and stuff is, it's weird. It's like my belly is like, okay, good, we ate. And then I won't be able to eat much later. Keeps me skinny, but it's like kind of annoying. But it was the one kind of incongruous thing, is like, why is he insisting so much that I eat this thing? And then he opened it and ate half to try to give me the other half. And I was like, I'm sorry, I just really don't want this. But then I figured out later why he was doing that. Because as we were just yammering about our respective knowledge of each other's languages as we were walking earlier. Whoa, hey, maybe I criticized King's Quest V too much. This turned into snow, like, immediately. Just turn this one corner and now the whole path is snow. Cool. But it's because I was just like, whatever Korean I remember from... It's amazing that I remember any Korean from when I worked as a barista in Vancouver, because that was literally 20 years ago. Not quite. Almost 20 years ago. But I remember, Il I Samsa O is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I had my Korean friend, Sunny, I had her teach me, because I used to work the graveyard shift, and our boss was from South Korea, and he was this kind of hard-ass military guy, but I thought maybe I could make him laugh if, he always asked every morning how things went, and he wasn't asking how things went for me, he didn't care, he meant how did things go money-wise, but I asked her how to say hungry and tired. How do I tell him I'm hungry and tired? And she taught me pigonhai and pegopa. And if you want to say it with polite honorifics, it's pigonhayo, pegopayo. I don't remember which one is which anymore, and I don't know why I remember those words. It's insane that I remember those, you know? So I was like, I know those, that's all I know. But then he prodded a little more, and he's like, I bet you know insamida. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess so. I actually know that from the VTuber Chibidoki. Insamida! She always says that. Which I believe just means thank you, right? I don't know. And then Anyang. I know that from Arrested Development. They thought that was the kid's name, but he was just saying hello. So I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. I do know Insamida and Anyang. Pigonhai, Pegopa, Ili Samsa O. That's it. There you go. There's my Korean. But I was just saying words that I knew. I was not at all insinuating that I was hungry and tired, but it would be a natural thing to say after a big hike, a big day of hiking. Because, yeah, right after that, he asked me what time I started. And I was like, oh, I don't know, like 1 p.m. You know, I'd only been hiking a few hours. It's not that big a deal. But I think he interpreted that I was saying I was hungry and tired. So then he was probably confused that I was like, really? You're that tired? You've only been hiking since 1 p.m.? And then that's why he kept trying to give me food. Because I said I was hungry. I didn't realize any of this till later. It was like, oh, that makes sense. Anyway, very nice guy. My first time being in a car in South Korea. And it's always cool, like I was saying, with the being in a car in Japan, even though that was a weird situation with the guys from the Buddhist temple. But even like the first time I got driven somewhere in Toronto, or the first time I got driven somewhere in New York, and the first time I got driven somewhere in Vancouver, like you're just off of the public transportation grid. All of a sudden you can just go all these places you can't normally go. It's kind of cool. Not cool enough for me to learn how to drive or get a license, but kind of neat. And this guy, he was like a little younger than me, but he's probably late 30s. And like an actual business guy, like a for real, for real citizen, as most people are. Man, this is nice, by the way. What a perfect little afternoon hike. Like, I still think, I guess, Googie is probably my main, I consider that like the easiest gate if you just got to remember one, I guess, because it has such a memorable name. G-U-G-I, nice and easy. Even though this Jungmyung gate is probably somewhat easier to get to, and I seem to end up here more often. But from Googie to here, or from here to Googie, or anywhere, any of these gates around here, this little southern part of Bukhansan, just find one of the major entrances, and then just follow the guidelines to get to another one of the entrances. And it'll only take at most a few hours, maybe less. And it's just fucking beautiful. Fuck, dude, just on this mountain path along the edge of the mountain, but not like scary. It's like quite, even for a scared of heights man like me, not bad. Can see all the other peaks around me. There's the city out beyond, and then even more mountains beyond that. Extremely wonderful. Man, though, I really do have a tough time internalizing these names. Maybe that's why I like Googie too. Googie is very extra pretty as an entrance, but it's also easy to remember, like Jangmyung Dom. I'm already forgetting them. Like, I have to look them up every time I want to say them. Basically, even with subway stops and whatever. You know, I've remembered Hongik and Hapjeong just because I'm right there. But generally, I just remember the first letter. I want to go to the D gate. I want to go to the B gate. I want to go to the J entrance. I want to go to, you know. It's, I'm slowly remembering some stuff, but it is really tough. Because, like, all of those gate names that are all slightly different. Same thing with, like, subway stations in Japan and stuff. A lot of these terms are even Amsterdam. Zuid. Z-U-I-D. Turns out that just means south. South station. But I don't know that. A lot of the names in Japan are, like, yeah, east, west, north. It's probably the same here. I'm sure all of those variations of the gate names are just probably logical, sensible geographic markers or something like that. But they're all just an abstract word to me. I just gotta remember them raw. It's very hard to do. But anyway, yeah, this guy who gave me the drive, this is where I wonder how things would go. I mean, I'm just such an introvert man. I just want to do stuff on my own, which generally serves me pretty well, even just on, I mean, here it's similar to Japan, where I'd say they're more friendly here. That thing I noticed in Japan where hikers will just act like you're not there, that still kind of happens here, but less. There's more people here that are willing to say hello, but it is kind of weird. Even on my way up here, I passed a couple of white as snow super Europeans and just said, like, howdy, and they still didn't really say hi back. One of them kind of laughed a little. It's just like, what is going on? I don't know. Maybe it's not at all an Asian thing. Maybe it's just that Canadians are just too damn friendly. It's like inconceivable to us to not just like say hello or to have a little chit chat about something or just a quick passing word if you were in Canada. I heard a thing the other day about parts of the UK where you thank the bus driver and they're discussing whether or not that's weird. I think like rural parts of England and then outside the UK and good old Ireland, I believe they do that. I don't know. Just I was like, oh, glad someone else does that because in Canada, it's not weird at all. Thank you. Thank you to the bus driver. But I was quite surprised that even the fellow white folk rebuked my howdy, you know, say something, say hello. It's just weird. I don't understand it. Canadian in non-Canadian places, everyone is so unfriendly, but I don't really care because again, basically I just want to be on my own. It's fine. If anything, to be immediately hypocritical, it is actually a little draining in Canada to have to make eye contact with every person you pass, to have to say hello to every person you pass. But it's like important, you know, it's why Canadians are friendly. It's why Canadians are nice. It's why Canadians are polite. It's like herd immunity. It's like you have to, it's, I mean, similar in some ways to like how people in Japan actually pick up after themselves. Like you got to ingrain this behavior in the social fabric. And the only way it gets ingrained is constant, constant repetition and enforcement. So, I mean, yeah, that's like, it's the creepy side to any collective behavior. But some of it's nice. And in the case of Canada, you kind of got to say hi to everybody all the time. You kind of got to be friendly all the time. And then you'll be friendly. You know? Otherwise, it gets bred out of you and you're no longer a nice happy puppy with soft ears, you slowly become a creepy wolf who doesn't fucking acknowledge other humans. But anyway, what I'm trying to get to with this ramble is, what if I were the type of traveler that was trying to make friends? What if I were the type of person who was trying to be sociable? I mean, I feel a little guilty about it sometimes that I can't give people what they would like from me. You know, I don't have the energy reserves, the social energy reserves to be friendly to everybody, to have, if anything, I feel like it's such a bizarre concept to me when people don't have friends or can't make friends. I just never had that problem. It's like my house was always the house everybody came to and everyone hung out at. I was always the nexus of friend groups, you know, different friend groups would know each other through me. Even in junior high school, when I had a pretty hard time when I first got there, because I didn't know anybody in that neighborhood and I got bullied a little. But back home, I still had a bunch of friends in my neighborhood. And yeah, I just always have found it's like the opposite problem. Too many friends, too many people want through the door. I know it sounds weird to say. I don't want to sound like I'm fucking, it sounds like super arrogant. But I think it's just one of these bizarre, just the unfairness of reality. People who want friends sometimes can't get friends. People who don't necessarily want friends have to turn people away. I don't know why, it's just how it is. But yeah, various opportunities have sprung up while traveling to get to know people better, or to go do stuff, or to follow up with a follow-up activity. And this was one. This guy gave me his business card. I won't say his name or his company or anything, but he sells Himalayan pink salt, I think it was called. He wanted to exchange phone numbers, but I was like, I legitimately don't have a phone number. I'm sorry, my phone just has Wi-Fi. But he gave me his card with his email and stuff, and he just basically said, like, hey, if you like hiking, I gotta go travel around for business. I gotta go to various local places. I can take you. I'm gonna go. You know, like, I'm gonna go places and go hiking. And I could use a fucking English-speaking hiking buddy. We can speak English, buddy. We can go hike, you know? And not only did I already know I was leaving Seoul in like a week. Oh, speaking of the Lot Tower, there it is. I can see it from here. God, that thing is really fucking big, dude. It's really fucking big. And it seriously looks like in this haze, and it's just like this, from here it just looks like a big spike. It looks like it's from Dune or something. It's like, what the fuck is that? I really should try to go there and just see what it looks like from the ground. Although normally these buildings from the ground, I mean, I don't know, like the Empire State Building from the ground doesn't look like anything. but this one might. It's fucking real big. But yeah, it was kind of weird where, I mean, I just, yeah, I took the card and was like, hey, maybe, you know, just, I was just polite about it. But it's kind of a shame to know that it's like, I'm just not that guy. It's just not going to happen, my friend. I kind of wish I could be that guy. I bet it would be really fun. There's a whole other world of adventure awaiting me if I was just more open to being more sociable and to meeting people and going to do stuff. But that's not what I'm here to do. I am here to be all by myself, hike by myself, write books by myself, wander around by myself. But I appreciated it, and that was a very cool guy, and I especially appreciated that drive that day because I had basically inadvertently abandoned myself on the other freaking side of the mountain just because I took one little wrong turn, one little change in the itinerary, and it flung me off to a whole different place. But all right, I'm almost up to the gate. That is my tale of how fucking awesome all these little hikes are from the main entrances to Bukhansen. You kind of can't go wrong. The worst thing that can happen is you can just kind of end up on the wrong end of town and you might have a long walk ahead of you. But everything's well maintained, everything's well signposted, and yeah, you're always on an official path. You're not allowed to go on the other paths. In fact, as we were leaving the park, we were driving past one really big peak, and I just pointed it out to the guy and was like, man, that one's crazy. Look at that. And he said it was actually illegal to go up on that one, which is probably for the best because it looked extremely barren, rocky, scary, and dangerous. I feel like Korea has got your back. There's also, wouldn't do me any good, but there's constant posts everywhere with numbers on them. So if you have an emergency, you call the emergency number, you give them the post number, they know right where you are. This shit is excellent. It's just goddamn excellent. Yeah, and there we go. I can see the gate. I can see the gate up ahead of me. So yeah, presumably I'll get up to this gate, go through, go down the other side to Gugi with no further adventures today. Today, I just wanted to actually do this path in the reverse order properly since I got so turned around the other time. But like I said, it was great. It was awesome. Had a separate adventure. Met some guy. Had a little chit-chat. So if we just fade out from here, presume everything went fine. And nothing adventuresome happened. I just walked down the other side of the mountain through a beautiful valley. And had a wonderful day. All right, I'm gonna put my fucking mask back on. Thank you for listening. For now, this is likely my goodbye to Seoul, my goodbye to Bukhansen. But yeah, things certainly did turn around for Seoul. Started kind of in the dumps, then they became moderately intriguing. And yeah, this park is so fucking good. It's so fucking good. So everything ended off pretty well. Cheers to you, Seoul. A very delayed, very asterisk-filled, super conditional thumbs up. That's the best I got. But that's a lot better than what I thought when I first got here. It's not how I thought things would end up a lot worse than that. I thought I would just be counting the days. Now I'm actually like, oh, darn, I gotta go. So that's a pretty good turnaround. All right, thank you for listening. I'll see you next episode.